This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
You are on the Free Breakfast this morning. It is 12 minutes past 8, and joining me on the line is author Megan Nicol-Reed. Megan's had a career as a journalist and a columnist, and now an author of two novels, One of Those Mothers, and most recently, Other People's Bodies. She's appearing with fellow panellists Josie Shapiro and Rachel Paris on the Fiction Three Ways panel as part of Hamilton Book Month. And we're delighted to welcome you to the Free Breakfast. No mai, haere mai, Megan.
Sorry, Kate, I just dropped out there, but I am here. Kia ora.
That's okay, no worries. I just was saying lots of nice things about you, so.
I didn't miss out on the compliment.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, well, look, thanks so much for joining us. Gosh, it's lovely to talk with you. And I wanted to start because people might know you from your column writing. You've received several nominations for New Zealand's Best Columnist over the years, and you had your column in the Sunday Star Times and Canvas. So that's something that's where people might recognise your name from particularly. But I wanted to start with that because the crafting of a column is, I guess, a real skill. What do you think makes a good column, and how did you sustain that? Because how many years did you do that?
I did it for 7. Five years for the Sunday Star Times, and then they dumped me, and I was devastated. Even though I'd kind of known that the writing was on the wall, It's one thing, though, isn't it? Deep down recognising that, but then when someone actually says, we don't want you anymore, of course it's the worst rejection. And so I vowed that was it. I wasn't going to stick my head up above the parapet again. But then the Herald approached me and asked me to write a column for them for 2 years. To write a column for them. But I vowed with that one that I would recognise when it was time to go and I would be the one to pull the pin. So I did after 2 years. But that didn't actually answer your question at all.
No, but that was a good background because I guess it speaks to... I'm getting a wee bit of a crackle off the phone, Megan, sorry, but maybe just hold it slightly further away.
Is that any better?
Yeah, that's better. Brilliant.
Okay, I'm revealing myself to be a Luddite.
That's okay. No, that's perfect. That's a lot better. That's great.
Okay.
Yeah. I think good. Sometimes, that's all good. But thank you, listeners. We'll edit that out later for the audio clip. I guess that speaks to the challenges in the media landscape, isn't it? And I think we've lost a lot of fresh voices. We've got sort of just a very limited number of columns now, but I think they're often such a great way to get people's perspectives on things. So yeah, I mean, I guess it was just the craft of that, writing that column, how did you sustain it? And then I guess leading into, have you left that non-fiction world behind? But start with the craft of the column and then
return to your original question. It's funny, I was talking to someone that runs a creative writing school about this yesterday, and when I went to journalism school, the kind of journalism 101 is keep yourself out of the story. And that was always really, I don't know, maybe I've got a really big ego or I just like talking about myself, but that was always really hard for me. I always wanted to get myself in the story. And when I was asked to write a column, it felt like I'd kind of found the perfect home because I've, yeah, I also, for me as a journalist, I always felt a bit of a hypocrite when you were trying to get people to open up about themselves and yet you are meant to kind of, sail above it all and not reveal anything about yourself. And I always found that the best way to get other people to open up was to be open myself. But it was funny, although I loved writing a column and I got to be as creative as I wanted to be in ways that I wasn't able to be when I was working as a straight reporter/features writer, I also had this increasingly strong urge to write fiction. And the column was actually, I realised, in the end, getting in the way of it, because it was kind of scratching this creative itch that I had, and kind of satisfying it in a way, and hindering me. I'm a champion procrastinator, and hindering me from getting down to the actual business of writing a novel, which was what I really wanted to do.
That's a great way to think about it, in the sense that I guess the weekly deadline of a column was probably brilliant for you as a procrastinator, but
yes,
as you say, it was getting in the way of that longer form thinking and development and craft of a piece of fiction. And how did you, so making that call, that must have been quite tough though to give up, or did you, was it not? Did you find that you just sort of knew?
Yes and no. It was tough to give up in that, well, obviously it's some regular income, and along with it comes, as you know, it gives you a platform, and so you're walking away from, you know, a very, maybe like in New Zealand standards, kind of, by New Zealand standards, probably about F grade celebrity status. but it was also time. I had mercilessly mined my private life for my column, and my children often featured in it, and they were, although they had kind of liked it initially, they were reaching that age where, actually, no thanks, and I don't want my mother, using my kind of first drunken experience as an entry point for discussing how to manage your teenager's drinking. So it was a good time for my family to step away.
Yeah, that's a good consideration to make, isn't it? And I used to write a little column back in the day in Australia when I was working over there for Rural Press, and it was a little bit similar. We had quite big age gaps between our kids, and as our oldest son got to those sort of teenage years, even though there was much hilarity between the two boys and the relationship they had, you sort of know, don't you? You go, right, okay, we probably need to step away, because it's, in our case, we were in a smaller town. So
everyone knew you.
Yeah, sort of. Well, yeah, that was going to get like that. But so that changed then, and I'm interested in really the stories that, the first stories that you had coming out, and also how, as a self-proclaimed procrastinator, how have you cracked on and just got into it? So maybe take us back. How did you make that big segue into that leap from the regular paid deadline driven to having to have a self-imposed regime?
Well, not very successfully, as evidenced by the fact that it took me 7 years to complete my first novel. I mucked around so much. I could come up with every excuse in the book. I mean, it always strikes me as so odd. Like, I say that I have this burning urge to write and that it's what I really want to do, and yet I'll do everything but. I'm just in awe of someone like your local Catherine Chidji, who writes religiously every day, and I yearn to be like that, but I'm not. But it was, for a long time I kind of mucked around about what I was actually going to write, and I had all these huge ideas, but then a very wise friend said to me, sorry, can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I've got a crackle at my end. Okay. Said to me that so much of, there was a novel in my columns, And, I mean, I guess it's that old adage of, and I think particularly with debut books, write what you know. Mm-hmm. So I realised that I had so many stories kind of within easy reach rather than going and doing this huge kind of world building that I was thinking about. And once I got my head around that, it definitely became easier, and then I just had to battle my own natural instinct to fold the washing or wipe out the Tupperware drawer.
Yeah, there's always something to do, isn't there, when you've got something more important that you need to be getting on with.
Yeah.
And I think too, when you've got a family, you know, you can create urgency and you can go, oh, I must do this and I have to do that. So going back and looking through those, I'm thinking about some of your work, you know, you do seem particularly interested in writing about women's lives, which of course are endlessly fascinating, and family life. And so those ideas then, going back to the columns, was that the more of the focus for the first book? But you've got your second book, which we'd love to talk about, because I'm guessing that's what you're going to be talking about more tonight. But Other People's Bodies, centred around friendship between women and the way this can change. Can you tell us just a little glimpse about Other People's Bodies?
What was the last bit of your question? How the...
It's centred around friendship, and can you tell us just a little bit about the book and about, what the themes are, or maybe a little bit about the characters? Just a little bit about,
Of course. As most of us over COVID would have experienced, probably had people in our lives that through that time kind of ended up in very different places to yourself in terms of their how they felt about how they'd been treated as a citizen, their thoughts on their own health and their kind of sense of agency around their health. And I was so endlessly fascinated by how such unlikely bedfellows had ended up on the same page. You know, you had kind of tino rangatira tanga, Māori sovereignty activists suddenly camping out at Parliament alongside kind of people on the extreme right. And I've always been very interested in groupthink, and I got, I really wanted to write something not about that experience per se, but how a set of ideas could infect people almost, and bring them together. And as you've said, I like writing about women's relationships, women's friendships, and I was trying to come up with a way that I was going to bring. I had this idea that it was going to be five women, and that how that they would be brought together and swept up by a kind of philosophy. And I was thinking, I didn't want to do social media because that felt too obvious. And I thought about a book club, but quite a few people have written about book clubs. And actually it was my publisher who said to me, you work out a lot. Exercise is such ripe territory for that kind of fanaticism and obsessive thinking. Why not set it in a gym? And so that's when it all came together. And so my latest book, Other People's Bodies, is about five women who enroll in this private gym run by this very charismatic couple. And the man has, unbeknownst to them, kind of become interested in more than just their fitness, and he convinces them to sign up for this program. And several of them end up in a very perilous position, thanks to their both him and their own vulnerabilities. So, yeah, that's in a very big nutshell, that's what this book is about.
Look, it sounds intriguing and also so relatable, because I think everybody, either because they went down a particular direction or because they had friends or extended family go down directions and during that, and the body sovereignty, you're right, there was sort of the body sovereignty naturopath type people up against, you know, the extreme conservatives, and it was a fascinating kind of hydra, wasn't it, that beast?
So that's
incredibly relatable, and obviously taking it down to that personal level of friendship, that sounds absolutely intriguing for other people's bodies, and the setting's brilliant. And with the panel tonight, I know you're going to be talking a little bit more about it. You're there with Josie and Rachel. It'll give you the chance to talk books with Tina Shaw. How do you find events like these, and what are you looking forward to?
I really enjoy them. I mean, it's definitely easier, I think, when you're on a panel, when it's not all on you. I was just laughing to myself, actually, before we started talking, because I was trying to remind myself of tonight, which, by the way, it is tonight at 6:30 at the Waikato... Oh, no, I'm going to say it wrong. Is it the museum or the art gallery?
No, the Waikato Museum, yeah.
It is the museum, okay. And our event is called Fiction Three Ways, and it reminds... You know when you go to a really fancy restaurant and they have, like, lamb three ways?
Yes, yeah.
I was having a little chuckle to myself. But the thing... just a little plug for tonight's event to your listeners. Please come, primarily because I'm sure it will be smart and fun and edifying and all those things, but also... The thing that I'm, when you said what, you know, how do you feel about events like this? I recently was part of an event where I turned up and there were seven people in the audience, one of whom was the organizer, one of whom was the organizer's partner, and one of whom was the organizer's partner's mother. And so please come because, that was really embarrassing.
So you want a good crowd, yeah?
Yeah, we really do. It's obviously, you know, there's much more energy in a room with a decent sized audience. And it's such a I didn't even know that there was such a thing as Hamilton Book Month until. I got the invitation to attend. It's so great. I think there's 18 events all up, and a lot of them are free. So, you're lucky.
It's phenomenal. No, they're an absolute powerhouse. Catherine Wallace and Gail Pittaway are the instigators of it. It sort of grew out of Poetry Day. And look, it's right. Fantastic. And people can also come along to the Literary Pub Quiz, which Gail and I are hosting for the first time on next Thursday. But tonight's event is on at 6:30 at the Waikato Museum. It's free. You don't need to register. Just head along. I do know some people who are going. I'm hoping to get there as well. And it's good fun. And I do think that the Fiction Three Ways is fun. Just as a handy tip for your next party, we often do chips five ways, chips three ways, which will be, or potatoes three ways, salt and vinegar, sour cream and chives.
That's my kind of party. I love a potato.
Yeah, it's done as a bit of a joke amongst the we do a little neighbourhood thing, and it's done as a bit of a joke. Who's doing the, you know, the potatoes three ways, which is salt and vinegar, chicken and whatever it is, you know, very silly to keep the kids happy.
That's excellent.
Hey, look, thanks so much, Megan, for joining us this morning and just giving us a glimpse into your creative work. If people want to find out more from Megan and also her fellow panelists, Josie and Rachel, there with Chair Tina Shaw, head along tonight, 6:30 at the Waikato Museum. It's not a late night. You can be home in time for, you know, a little port or something afterwards. But
and your favourite series.
Yes, yeah, that's right. And have fun tonight. Thanks so much, Megan.
Thank you, Kate. Have a great day.
You too. That's Megan Nicol-Reed there with her chatting about her appearance ahead of book club tonight.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.